You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and A-Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, their ZDX is the most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast with me, Robbie Musto, and him, Robbie Earl, talking Premier League football. And this was match week 26. Now, of course, we'll get to all the big games, the big clubs, the big stories. But match week 26 will be remembered for one big headline. Manchester City's hammering of Chelsea Football Club 6-0. That's the worst ever Premier League result for Chelsea. And a shocking game, Robbie Earl, my friend. And we have to start there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of tough to know where to start because there was so much to talk about and so much kind of shock and awe when you saw this game play out.
Yeah.
Do you want to start with Chelsea or do you want to start with the winners of this game and at the top of the league right now on goal difference, Manchester City?
I think we should start with City. Yeah. They won. It's one of those matches, Rob, this weekend, and I was saying to Rebecca Ford, kind of tough one to call this. I said, could be a few goals in it. I said, could even be a scoring draw. And if somebody said to me there was six goals in the game and didn't know, I'd probably said, what, three each? Because what I know about Chelsea when they're good and they're up for it and they fancy the challenge, that they can be a test for anyone. And I put Manchester City in, they can be a test for anyone in this league. Higuain's as a centre-forward, they've been desperate for so long. To see six goals, to be 4-0 down with 25 minutes on the clock for a team that 2 years ago were title winners, were celebrating a title, it's such a contrasting position to be in. And Manchester City dominated possession, were physically better, were mentally sharper, were hungrier, some of the things with Manchester City when you play them, Rob, is about like, that's just a brilliant ball. That's just, you know, the Aguero goal. That's a bit of brilliance. But when they work harder than you, when they press better than you, when they do the things that everybody can do better than you, you've got a problem. And the biggest compliment I can give for Manchester City is two things stood out for me. One, the hunger of this team stood out. Like, these are champion players. These are people who've got silverware. These are people who've got plenty of money. So all the reasons why Chelsea and some players don't deliver, Man City could have. The other thing I was thinking was, if I'm a Liverpool player right now, I'm thinking, wow, by the way, we cannot afford to take our foot off the gas because the team that are chasing us are in prime position and in prime sort of fettle right now.
This is, and I apologise to the Man City fans, right, Rob, but I've got very little to say about Man City from this game. Very little. Because there's of course, the games that we watch, Rob, we make notes. And there's one side of the paper for one team and the other side of the paper for the other. I was busy writing notes on the right-hand side. City was nothing. All I've got on City, 11th Premier League hat-trick for Aguero. Well done, mate. Brilliant. Yeah. Mr. Sitter scored a goal.
Sorry, go on, mate.
And Raheem Sterling gave Azpilicueta a bit of a doing down that side, which is a surprise to me. They didn't have to play very well, Rob. They didn't have to work very hard. Didn't have to do anything. There's nothing that was out of the ordinary or particularly brilliant with that performance because of Chelsea's inability to do anything in terms of matching them. So the lineup was an expected lineup. Mm. They played really well. I think we expected David Silva to play, but it was Gundogan who played in there. And City did their thing, and they punished Chelsea for the mistakes. They punished Chelsea for trying to go toe-to-toe. They punished Chelsea for having an open game. But for Manchester City, I didn't learn anything. They played really well, and they won this game super easy in second gear, Rob. They didn't have to work hard to win the game. So that's why I'm apologising, because other than that, there's nothing to add for City. Nothing to add. We know they've got a brilliant striker. We know that they control most games. We know that they get in behind. But there was nothing extraordinary because it didn't need to be. Because when we switched to Chelsea, it's all about Chelsea performance in this game that made it a comfortable game for Manchester City. And there's nothing to add. I've got very little to add because it was so normal, expected, comfortable, second gear at best in the second half. And they did, of course, they did what they had to do, but nothing that we haven't seen before. It was all about Chelsea's inabilities in this game that made it 6-0, more than me come on here and say, wow, City were flipping unbelievable, because they weren't. They didn't have to be. That's the headline.
I think you're doing City a slight disservice there. I think we've seen teams in this league, players in this league, who have got great ability, as much quality, but don't deliver. Teams who don't press the ball as hard, who don't.
Yeah, but we know they do all that, Rob. But we haven't learned anything
different.
No, but
they don't do it. They don't do everything. We've seen them at Newcastle, Rob. We've seen them at Leicester.
Very,
we've seen
them have few and far between.
And we said there's a bit of a question mark about them now. I think we've got to say that they've shown us that there's the hunger still in the belly. We questioned, you know, as champions, does a little bit of that hunger go?
Yeah, okay.
It doesn't, Rob. When they're chasing down balls, when their flair players are running down, when Raheem Sterling, as you said, not only flying past Azpilicueta and giving him an absolute nightmare time, but winning the ball back, but getting his shape and all those little things, I think that's a credit to Manchester City and Pep Guardiola that you might be doing them a slight disservice.
No, listen, there's no question. They get that Newcastle result, and you know, Pep said after the game today that they kind of looked at each other and had a big long chat about it. They've reacted, they beat Manchester City, they beat Everton, and now they've hammered Chelsea. I just in this one-off game, Rob. Well done. Well done, City. They're at it. And it was just normal service. And that's what makes it shocking, that 6-0 doesn't have me, who love to eulogise and you know, appreciate the City football and all that. There's nothing really to, because it wasn't anything that was that stunningly brilliant.
So you said, and you make the point that, you know, Pep after the Newcastle game had a big long chat, and I think we said that might be defining for Man City. That might just be the wake up call they needed. So after Chelsea lost at Bournemouth 4-0 recently at Vitality, there was a big long chat by the Chelsea manager. He threw out his coaches. He had a big long 50-minute apparently chat and argument and sorted things out with his Chelsea players. They win 5-0 against Huddersfield. So after their chat, how can you put a performance in like they did today and that chat have had any kind of benefit?
You immediately think about, wow, why, how, and who to blame for this performance. And in recent podcasts and recent weeks, I've kind of said this is both here, by the way. This is a lot to do with the players that we've seen this before from different managers go from 1st to 10th, 1st to 5th in the Premier League. And Sarri's having an issue trying to get the best out of the team. So there's certainly an acceptance from me that this group is hard to get going. But it is the manager's role, and the manager has been stubborn in his system. He's been so stubborn in his team selections, and this was another really stubborn performance from the manager, Rob. Now, for me, this was damaging for the manager. Now, I support him. I kind of like him. I know what he's trying to do. Would I like to see him try a few different things and make some changes? Yes, I would. But I've always said, I think in the last show, just let him get on with it and let's see, you know, how he does, give him some more games. Yeah. This was damaging. It was damaging because there was no sense from this team. And we'll get on to the players, Rob, because, of course, there's a split here of how much you want to put on the manager and the players. But from the manager, in terms of the tactical setup, in terms of the players' kind of preparation, there was nothing in this performance, this start, that said, We gotta make sure we're defensively strong. Mm. We gotta make sure that we're in our shape. And a 4-3-3, as we know, can be flexible, can be high 4-3-3, it can be a 4-5-1. You can, within that system and his system, you can be more defensive and more cautious, a little bit more cautious. Yeah. But Sarri didn't do it. It's all about his football. He defends with possession, and for the most part, that works out great. They don't have an awful defensive record. But when you're away at Man City, and when you're prepared to try and play out and you go toe-to-toe and you're going to have an open game and you're going to try and play from the back, and when they get the ball, you're not going to be bothered about your shape or pressing very well or just being mentally ready for it, then that's what you get. I'll let you come in there, Rob, because that was my first impression. I was like, wow, this team isn't prepared tactically or emotionally or mentally that this is Man City away. And they're a brilliant footballing team. So we got to make sure that we do certain things and track certain runners and be switched on at set pieces and don't make mistakes and press and make it hard for them to play. Not one bit. It was all about what they did with the ball, and it was a bad day for that, and they got hammered.
There's a lot of talk about systems and obviously the sorry ball in the 4-3-3, and I just wanted to go back to the Antonio Conte, because he came in with a 3-4-3 kind of system, 3-3 at the back and the wing backs and then players underneath the striker, and that was a system that pretty much he stuck to and won the title, Rob. But that system had players playing well in it, functioning properly and getting the best out of the players that it had. The 4-3-3 that Sarri it seems to be wedded to. And that's okay if you're wedded to a system, but your players have to be playing well and it has to get the best out of individuals. And when you go to Manchester City, and I thought this was really interesting, and Raheem Sterling talked about it with Pep and Man City, is that he prepares for every game. Sometimes he throws in a different system to upset the balance of the opposition, and you know they have to work out what Man City are doing. With Chelsea, all week, you knew what was coming. There is absolutely no surprise, no intrigue, no wonder what they're going to do. You know, you can plan from the first day you get to the day before the game of exactly how you're going to go play against Chelsea, because you know what they're going to give you. And when these players aren't playing anywhere near their capacity, Chelsea become quite easy to play against.
But that being said, Rob, it's not as though there haven't been teams before, good teams, champion teams, that you don't know what you're going to get. I mean, Mourinho's teams, for the most part, is champion teams. You know what you're going to get. Yeah. So I don't know whether...
You've got to be playing well. That's what I'm saying. You've got to be playing well, and the system's got to suit your
argument,
players.
My argument of a team knowing what somebody's going to do when they come to you, I don't know.
I'm saying it's okay if your team are playing well and the individuals...
Well, that's a different argument.
But what I'm saying is, so I'm trying to say is that his team aren't playing well and the individuals, that's why he's got to change the system. If the system was playing well and the players were, you go on, carry on. Go and take it.
Yeah, we know he's stubborn. We know he's stubborn. And now the more that you see him, you listen to him and you watch his teams, that's what we're seeing. It's just, again, Rob, I'll be honest with you. I don't have a huge problem with a guy that loves a system and will stick to it. But you've got to change some of the personnel. You've got to tweak it a little bit. And if you've got to bring Kante in alongside Jorginho for a little bit, then do that. And I think, you know, particularly against Man City away, that a 6-0 scoreline in the manner and the shambolic kind of defending, organisation, effort, body language, everything else, it has to be. And I want to get on and talk about the players' responsibility next, Rob. But that is damaging for Mauricio Sarri. And, you know, we know what it's like at Chelsea. He could get fired tomorrow.
Yeah.
He could get given the season. He could get given longer than that if they believe that the culture and the football, these players at the club right now need to be switched out because it's this kind of boom and bust situation with this current squad. But make no mistake, and I've kind of, in some ways, not made excuses, but I've kind of like been a bit more not so kind of harsh on the manager, because a lot of us do with the players. Today, for me, you know, that 50-50 is more on the manager. I didn't like what I saw in terms of his setup and the mentality of the group to be ready to defend. And that is a tactical thing. You can still be in the same system and you've got to be ready to defend. Now, we should go on and talk about the players.
Let's just stay one minute. I just want to continue with the manager. A couple of things, and I want to get your take on them. I'm going to give you my take before, and then you can shoot me down if you like. The manager over the last few weeks has talked about motivation and the team being up for it, and he talked about a lack of leadership in the team. And I thought today he showed a lack of leadership. And I get the sense, I get why he storms off the pitch, Rob, but he should shake the hand of Pep Guardiola. He should chant. He's the leader of the football. You can shake the hand. You don't have to make a big thing. You don't have to talk to him. Shake the hand and go down. Take ownership of your team and take ownership of the situation. Him walking down the tunnel, I saw as a slight fault. I saw as a guy like, I've got to get out of here. And I'll throw this one out now. And Rebecca and I were talking during the game. It wouldn't surprise me if this guy resigned, by the way. I think he's that kind of character, personality. He might not wait to be sacked. He might resign and say, you know what, this group of players ain't for me. And I know that in most cases that wouldn't happen, and his agent would be saying you never resign because you don't get the payoffs and all that. He's a different cat. He's been brought up differently. He's come from a different place. I just think he might go, you know what, this group of players, I'm going to show them that they can't work. I can't work with them, and he could walk away.
I don't think I'm
not saying it's going to happen. But he's that type of personality.
I don't know if he is. That's a big kind of call to make that, Rob. Do we really have any kind of evidence of that? You know, further down in his career, or
no, but not that he walks.
I don't see him walking away. I don't see him giving up on this.
He gives up. I think it might be his way of publicly saying, you don't understand that this group of players are so unmotivated, so that it makes my job difficult. Not like I don't want the challenge, and a little bit more how it seemed to me Wagner went on mutual terms. I didn't like that as much. I think his thing will be like, I'll show people that I don't want to stay for the money, and this group of players are the issue. Mm. And if they think that I'm the problem, I'll go away, and they can bring in someone else, and then they'll see the same problems again.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. It's almost like a stand on principle.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm not going to work. I can't. You know, I'd be really surprised. I mean, I think afterwards he said, didn't he, that people asked him about, does he feel pressure on his job? And you said, well, he said, you have to ask the club. You know, I feel there's always pressure. So I don't think, I know what you're getting at. Again, I'd be surprised. It's a really difficult situation right now. He's in his first season, by the way. What's he at? 6 months there or something? 6 or 7 months?
He's got a
cup final in a couple of weeks. You know, I just, for this particular game, like, wow, for this City away, you've got to make sure these players are set up to be able to handle City a little bit more than just thinking in a stubborn, maybe selfish way that our football, my football, will find a way. This City, they're a great team, but we can be great as well. They ain't ready for that, and they got caught out badly. Individual areas as well, and switching off at the set piece, and then Ross Barkley's header, etc. Of course, doesn't help. But even when you're 1 or 2 nil down, Rob, champion teams, good teams, like teams with character, you see a reaction, you see an effort, you see a bounce. Like, you know, let's try and get back in the game. Or you see a few people throwing a fist around, like, you know, just trying to get people wound up and try and get people going. There was nothing. I mean, at 4-0 in 22 minutes, I think I tweeted out, this could get, like, really ugly, like sevens or eights. And it wasn't that far away. Now, that of course, looks bad on the manager. But let's switch it to the players. Because can a group of players, Rob, no matter what the manager's done, and we've just criticised the manager, or I have, for setting them up without a defensive focus on what this game's going to entail. And yet, when it does go wrong, for there to be nothing from the players in terms of digging deep, rolling their sleeves up, showing some sort of determination to get back into the game, they just rolled over with the body language and everything else. And, you know, it's we've talked about this on previous shows, that this squad of players, in terms of winning titles, is probably done. There's been a big... We had a chat.
Take the probably out. Is done.
Yeah. Well, we had a little chat, Rob, before we got on here. And you know, this Chelsea kind of team over the last 5-10 years has won a lot of stuff. But it was based on a lot of top players, from your Lampards, your Terrys, your Drogbas, and then your Costas and your modern-day guys, Hazard that's come in and done a great job. Those players have drifted and are drifting out. It's a time for transition for me. That's what's needed at this football club in the summer to get some players out. Hazard will probably go, and it's probably the right call if his head's not in it and he wants to go to Real Madrid. And there's other players, aging players, defensive situation needs looking at. So that for me has got to happen, because this group, it's three times now where a manager has had a job trying to get this team to be consistent week out, to want to win, to work hard every single week. They don't. When it's going well, I've said this before, when it's something special's happening where they're going to win a title, they're up for it, of course. But as soon as they're not in that title challenge, they just can't be bothered. It doesn't interest them or excite them, and we have this drop off. And Mauricio Sarri now is dealing with that. And that is a big problem for him, married with his kind of stubborn tactics. Well, that's why you're seeing this kind of recent drop-off for me.
Well, I guarantee you, maybe Pep Guardiola aside, you put another manager into this football club with the same group of players, you get the same results. So I think we identify that the players, for me, are becoming a big issue. We keep going back to the John Terry, Frank Lampard, Didier Drogba, Petr Cech, good pros around your football club. But any club could go back to the halcyon days and that. Chelsea have got to start understanding where they are now. And Chelsea might have to go 3 or 4 bare years to rebuild again, to restock again, to come again and get some dominance in football. So that might be getting rid of Marcus Alonso and David Luiz and
Pedro, Willian and Hazard.
Yeah, and all those guys who are on the fringes and looking for deals, and maybe they've got one more deal in them, but are not that committed to it. Maybe it's time for that, and introduce the new child. Find the new John Terry, find the new Frank Lampard, find the new Didier Drogba, and guess what? In the year or two, they might not be champions, like those guys weren't before the Mourinho era and whatever. But give them time, build a spirit, get them playing the right football, and Chelsea can come again.
And rebuilding like that, you're saying find the next Lampard, the next Terry. I mean, how hard is that? And you've got a competition now in Europe, and apart from the Premier League and European football, what everybody's trying to find those next stars. But you're right. I think that's what they've got to try and do. They've got to restock. They had a really good decade of recruitment, achievement, and everything else. And all those trophies and new managers coming and went, and they won things. They won things because they still had a lot of good players at the football club. Yeah. And I think right now we're seeing that they're not so good anymore. And it's the great days and the motivated days are becoming fewer and fewer, and you've got to make changes. I suppose it's going to come down, you know, in terms of this little kind of this mix of manager fault and players fault. Football club now, Chelsea Football Club. Yeah. What are you going to do?
Correct.
Are you, and it might be, by the way, that at the end of the season, we have enough data and fact from what we've seen on the pitch that, you know what, this is in transition. Mauricio Sarri, not good enough. You finish sixth, you know, not good enough. You go, and a lot of the players go as well. It could be one of those. Or, you know, they try and plough on, they try and keep Hazard, they try and keep it going with a different manager. You said it on air, Rob, that if they just fire the guy right now, a new manager comes in and just takes the problems.
Yeah.
Just takes the problems. That's a problem.
It's interesting because I know you always go on this one and always say that, you know, managers can have time. Often the fans can have quite a big influence on how long a manager is. Do you still think the Chelsea fans, enough fans are with him or are still behind him, are still believing that Sarri is a guy? Because I get the sense, and it's only a sense from people I talk to and social media, that fewer and fewer are starting to be behind this guy.
I think that's absolutely right. And again, I started this show by saying this was incredibly damaging for Mauricio Sarri. Mm. And I think it is through the media, through the fans, through the football club, through the players. I mean, and I know we've just talked about how it's split the blame here for this as the players and the manager, but we all know the last buck does fall on the manager, and at 6-0 with that manner, wow. I mean, that's going to take some recovery. And you know what? I hope he gets the time, and I hope he gets it back on track. And I you know, for Chelsea fans' sake, I hope that they find some form again. But that is such a stunning headline of the worst ever Premier League defeat under this guy, on the back of comments before that a lot of people didn't like about he couldn't motivate this group.
Yeah.
I mean, there was something in it. I'm sure there's something in it. But by saying that, you know, he upset a lot of fans and stuff. So I tell you, that's going to take some recovery, Rob, for this guy at this football club. I just, you know, it's important to put out there that this isn't about him. It isn't about all about the players or the manager. It's a combination of both. But this, for me, was a bad day for Mauricio Sarri and how he set his team up and how they played, of course.
Yeah, let's move it on from Mauricio. Sorry, I think we've exhausted Chelsea and their problems. Interesting over the next couple of weeks to see what happens and what comes out of Chelsea Football Club, because they don't tend to give managers too much time. Let's move it to Anfield, Rob, because before this game, Liverpool, there seemed to be a feeling that this team were nervous, that maybe the wobble's going to come. There's draws against Leicester and West Ham. People were starting to say that, you know, maybe this is the time they lose a few games. I thought this was quite an impressive result, considering all the talk and the so-called pressure that was around them. I thought it was quite a comprehensive win, and it was a 3-0 win against Bournemouth and could have been more.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what they needed. I mean, I think in the last show, Rob, I remember saying that the Liverpool just got to get back to being good, get back to being very good, get back to being that good that you can win games easily. The start was startling, how quick they started. This counter-press, that we hear this this counter-press term, well, it was a pretty good example. It basically means is they're on the front foot, they're attacking, and then they give the ball away, and they could be at risk of getting countered. And, of course, they win the ball straight back again. If people out there are not quite sure what that term means, that's what it means. You're attacking. I mean, Barcelona did it, didn't they? Of the Pep Barcelona, where they give it away, but then they get the thing back so quickly. That's a counter. They're stopping a counter-attack, basically, by winning the ball back. Liverpool did that brilliantly in the game. Mm. Absolutely brilliant in the game. And the quality of the finishes and the goals and some of the football was like, that's it. Yeah. That's what Liverpool's got to this situation in the title race. And we saw it again. So top marks to the manager. For getting those players grounded again, rested, prepared, ready for that game. It was going to be a big game. They've been a little bit nervous at home the last couple of results. But I just thought that was back to really good Liverpool. Interesting, Rob, 4-3-3.
Yeah, so went back to that old shape, didn't he? Yeah.
What do you think? What's the deal with that?
I thought it was a bit like muscle memory. Let's go back to those days. Salah get out to the right. Mane from the left. Firmino looked happier again, and
we started to join
the play. And the three in midfield, Ronaldo, as I've said to you, I think he's a number one midfield choice now. Fabinho's having a bigger influence on games. I just thought that's Liverpool back to being free again, playing full. Some of the combinations from midfield to forward play were back to early season stuff where they just looked back to Liverpool. And I thought it was a big week for Jurgen Klopp, and he deserves a lot of credit because his players looked free. And not that there was huge pressure on, but there was definitely a little push from the media. As if, you know, some people were hoping we get the little hiccup here and then we can start saying, nah, I told you, Liverpool fans. Well, it didn't come, and credit to Klopp. And I think he went back to that old, let's just go back to what we were, what we knew, when we were good, when we were free. No, let's not think about this too hard.
It's a good sign as well, isn't it? Because it obviously, they played the 4-2-3-1 for long periods of this season. It's been the main reason that got them to this point, really. They started with 4-3-3. It wasn't really, remember at the start, it was a little bit clunky, not very good. They switched to Salah up front, and they did really, really good. So he's kind of got his tactical setups. Like, he's done them really well, hasn't he? Because they started to struggle a little bit. He's gone back to 4-3-3, and they got the success. So well done to him for doing that. And also, the players now will be very confident and grooved in both of these systems. So whatever's happening, if there is a couple of games, or even moments in matches, or a period in game where it's not going great, they can say, you know what, let's switch to the other system, pick on Shaqiri to the right-hand side, whatever it is. So that deserves credit as well, because it's nice to have that flexibility. Naby Keita, much better. Mm. Much better performance from him.
Yeah,
and Fabinho, as you said, I mean, he's growing into this role now, isn't he? Where I think when you used to watch him at the start, every time he gets it, you're like, what's he going to do with it? He's kind of comfortable now, and he doesn't make many errors, and some of his forward passing is better than you might expect from a defensive guy. So I thought he did really well. Trent Alexander-Arnold, Rob, is a big plus.
Yeah.
Came into the game at right back. They need those defending players back there. So I thought I was really impressed, and they did everything that I guess if you're a Liverpool fan, you wanted to see. Forget about the title race. Let's get out there. The fans were behind them. There's none of that kind of nervous quietness in the stadium. And it was a back to kind of best Liverpool with that combination playing. And Roberto Firmino, as you said earlier, Rob, he's so important to this team.
Yeah.
And he has been off it. But from minute one, charging around, closing down, getting on the ball, creating space for others. I thought he was back to a really good performance as well. So this was good from Liverpool and well needed.
It was an important as well, Rob, because the next Premier League game happens to be at Old Trafford in February 24th. Yeah, at Old Trafford. That's on NBCSN. 9:05 a.m. kickoff Eastern time. And it would have been difficult for them to go in even with another draw. A United team that's flying, a United team that you know is going to be up for that match. So I just thought it was a great confidence boost and a return to the good old days, and almost like a a boost for from now to the end of the season.
Really was.
It really feels like let's look forward to the end of the season.
Yeah.
I got the sense last week as though it was all becoming too much. It was a bit like, oh, I don't really want to be in a title race if this is how I feel. It felt like, you know, come on, enjoy it. We enjoy you. You played some brilliant football. You're in a title race, a bona fide race for the first time for a long time. Enjoy it and enjoy your football.
Yeah, they were limping along a little bit, weren't they? They're kind of limping to the finish line instead of powering through it. And like that, you know, that confidence performance should get them thinking, like, listen, this is what we can do. We deserve to be there. And they're going to be there or thereabouts. It's going to go right down to the wire, as Pep says. Just a quick note, you know, losing the FA Cup means right now, Rob, they've got 10 days off.
Yeah.
They got a 10-day window before they play Bayern Munich in the Champions League at Anfield. Yeah. And then they've got that, of course, the Sunday after that. Yeah. So, you know, I remember saying at the time that, of course you want to be in all competitions, but that enough nice. Mm. They got this window now. I'm not sure they're going to go away again. I'm not sure about that. But time to recover, to rest, to enjoy that performance and to prepare for the next few weeks. Because you're absolutely right. There's Bayern Munich at home. Man United away, Watford at home, then Everton and the Merseyside Derby away from home into the beginning of March. So it gets difficult. But that was good. That was good stuff from Liverpool and back to what the fans want to see.
Yep. So Liverpool did their job before Man City played. City obviously won and go back on top on goal difference. The third team in the race, Robbie Mustard, we must stress they are still in the race. Tottenham Hotspur, 3-1 winners against Leicester City. Heung-min Son again coming up with an important goal for the team to make the third goal and make it a comfortable situation for Spurs, who didn't have it all their own way in this one. I was quite impressed with Leicester at times. I thought they started the game well, the good combination play. I mean, big news was Jamie Vardy didn't start, was on the bench, and Claude Puel said he wanted to take a little bit of the pressure off him, that he has the shoulder of leading the line, which is an interesting way of putting that he's not starting him. So let's talk about the game. And also, I want to get your view on, because I think we might have differing views on the Jamie Vardy coming on as a sub and taking the penalty routine that happened. But first, Spurs, let's give them a little bit of credit, because they keep hanging in there, Rob. You know, however we look at it, they're on 60 points now, and they are 5 points behind Liverpool and Man City, and they're still in a race.
Yeah, I mean, this wasn't good Spurs, was it? It wasn't good Spurs. But I think at this moment in time for this club, given their injuries and given what's coming up, who cares? Mm. Who cares? It's about the 3 points. It's about the victory. They weren't, you know, Heung-min Son, I thought, had a poor game until he goes through in the end and makes it 3-1, and that's great, and he kept plugging away. I thought Harry Winks was excellent as a defensive holding midfield player, the bottom of that diamond. He is... another one that's a really important, very good player for Spurs. He's a very good player, and he will be for a long time. Of course, still very young, Harry Winks. So I thought he was impressive. Hugo Lloris had to come up with some big saves, by the way. He saved the penalty. Other saves he had to make as well. And we will talk about Leicester, because there's a lot of good stuff about Leicester, I thought, in the game.
Yeah.
But Spurs, you know, this is one of those, and Liverpool and other teams have had them throughout the season. They don't play great, and it's not pretty, and they look a little tired at times. But they got the victory there and limped over the line a little bit. But that's 10 wins out of 12 in the Premier League. Mm. Finding ways to win. We know that Harry Kane isn't far away. Dele as well, I don't think, is too far away. So if they can keep this going, and if they can keep that gap at 5 points, you know, going forward over the next few weeks, you know, whether they get in this new stadium or not, I don't know. I mean, Pochettino
not
has
happening.
Said, wow, what a flipping, what a, that's not that's happening. Bad, isn't it? That's
it
bad, bad from the club if they don't get in it.
I'll be really surprised, Robert, if they do. Just want to ask you, because I know we want to talk a little bit about the Vardy situation and then give Leicester a little bit of love and hopefully Claude Puel gets a bit of patience. I don't know if you heard the interview before the game, after we'd done the teams, that we went to Pochettino and he talked about, you know, resting a few players, Alderweireld and whatever, because obviously they've got the game against Dortmund midweek against Wednesday. And then he did the Poch thing, which was like, you know, a bit disappointed to be playing on Sunday and then got a game Wednesday. And it was and I always think he throws something a little bit negative out there. And I'm not sure what he does that for or if that's part of his personality. Was that part of that little bit about the winning bit? And go, I mean, one, it just gives a little bit of negativity to the situation. Is it if things don't go well? I mean, some teams are playing in the Champions League, played yesterday, Manchester United, and are playing Tuesday.
Tuesday,
they play, so Spurs play Sunday and play Wednesday, same rest time. I mean, It's something I don't like in Poch. It's a little something that I find a little bit irritating about him.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Rob. I mean, to be fair, other managers at times have moaned about fixtures.
Klopp
Jürgen
does it.
Klopp's
yeah,
moaned
Klopp,
about so, fixtures. Yeah. I think has Pep moaned in the past?
Pep
as well?
A little bit about Christmas, I think, saying it was ridiculous the amount of games, you know, the players
but,
are going
but, to. But I'm with you. I mean, like Sunday to Wednesday, it just means that it's Wednesday to Saturday. They got Burnley away. So, it's you know, you haven't got a Tuesday to Saturday gap for the next Premier League game. They got a one day less there.
Don't but big clubs have to do this, Rob?
Exactly, they do. Of
winning clubs
do.
Have to do this.
And the next match, the next Champions League match day might be different. They're probably playing on a Tuesday or whatever it is. So, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. You shouldn't. You want your manager to kind of rise above that and just kind of give an air of confidence that we've got this, we're in control. As if it's like, you know, we're hanging on here, guys. Yeah. Like we've got this fixture situation, we've got injured players and, you know, I haven't got any money and all that, which we all know. And you get that's why they get tremendous respect for what they're doing. But yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a big thing, Rob,
no,
about
it's
it.
No, it's not a big thing. It's just a little thing that just irritates me a bit with him because he's such a good manager. They're going so well. Just keep it going. Keep the positivity there.
Yeah, but good. I mean, good for them. Spurs, 3-1 victory.
Fine.
Keep it going. They keep winning.
We won a 3-horse race. Let's keep it going till May.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Leicester City, Rob. I mean, you know, sometimes people say we don't talk about some of the not so big clubs. Yeah. I think there's a... Not that we want to spend hours on it, but I think it's quite a lot with Leicester. You looked at the camera kept going to the bench. You got Jamie Vardy, Wes Morgan, Danny Simpson,
and old Okazaki. Brigade.
That's the old brigade on the subs bench, and you kind of saw them kind of talking with each other. I bet that's a tough dressing room, Rob. And let me add this to it as well. During the day, watching the games, there was something on social media came up with Kasper Schmeichel's dad, Peter Schmeichel.
Yeah,
of course.
I saw it.
Did you see that?
I saw it.
Ex-Man United goalkeeper, legend of a goalkeeper. Wow, he was scathing, scathing on the manager to say in an interview. Yeah, basically saying, you know, this is
a good
club.
Group, it's a good club, just haven't quite got the right manager.
So that's, wow. I mean, again.
Shouldn't be saying things like that, Peter Schmeichel.
Well, because it's obvious that it's going to come
from
his son.
But so then he should know better than that. That's not good.
So that's not good. Particularly given the what he's trying to do and some of the football that they're playing. Yeah. Leicester play some really good stuff. They're an incredibly young team, like really young team. You know, in different positions, they got a lot of 22-year-olds and 21-year-olds throughout the side.
From four were Gray, Barnes, Maddison and Gazal.
Yeah.
Gazal's, I think, 25, 26.
Indeed, he's
Maddison's
young
22,
in midfield. Chilwell's young.
And at times, they were giving Spurs some real problems. And as you say, Hugo Lloris had to come up with a couple of really big moments.
Yeah, he did. I just thought that for a team that people are on to the manager and is he the next manager going to get fired? And then you do see this, you know, he's big enough and brave enough to drop Jamie Vardy from the team. He didn't want him there. So Damari Gray plays up front. It's a tough environment, it seems, for Claude Puel. But isn't he... Again, we go by what we see. Yeah. They try and play good football. This is a different Leicester. Their goal was new Leicester, by the way. The goal they scored in this game was new Leicester.
Yeah.
Great football, switch to play, got it out, good ball in along the ground. Vardy comes in to score. Yeah, maybe an old scorer, but that's new Leicester. That's what they're trying to do, and that's what he's trying to do with this young group.
Yeah.
I mean, they've played really well against some of the best sides in the division. Again, they come out with a loss, and I get that. And then, what are they, mid-table, like 12th or something right now, Leicester? And they'll want to be higher than that. But surely, you know, when you look at that, you're not immediately thinking, flipping out, this team aren't playing for him, or they've got no idea, or they're not creating anything. They could have scored 4 or 5 goals, like, incredible. Which the one, who went through? Was it
Barnes?
Barnes went through.
Yeah.
I mean, really?
Score,
you didn't score that when you went through one-on-one?
Hit the goalkeeper. Wow. A little bit of inexperience.
So inexperience, again, yeah.
He's quick, and Damari Gray. Direct. I thought he'd give Trippi a real tough time of it, by the way, on the left-hand side. And you're right, Robin. And the problem is that plaudits are great, but Leicester fans want points. For some reason, they're not having Claude Puel. I don't know why. If I had a manager like Claude Puel and I saw what was being built, I'd be like, I'm going to back this guy. This guy looks like he's lowering the age. He's almost doing a little bit like Poch had to do going in at Spurs. He's dealing with some of the older players. He's leaning the thing up, and then he's coming with a new brand of football. Now that takes a bit of time, and it'll take a bit of investment. It'll take a little bit of patience, and there'll be the odd day when you're disappointing, but you'll see good football. I think, and it's a big and bold statement, Leicester City winning the title has got so many great things to remember it by, I think in a way is could harm them in the near future. Because all of a sudden there's this expectation, there's this change, there's a group of players. Now, don't miss to talk badly of the Wes Morgans, of Kasper Schmeichels, of Danny Simpsons, of Okazaki's, and those probably good lads, and Jamie Vardy. But some of them now, it needs to lean up again. I see Leicester as a mini Chelsea. I see a dressing room and some players that I'm not sure how committed they are to the manager and the cause. And I see an issue where this thing needs to change a little bit.
I think you know, going back to where the problems and the pressure comes on, it's been at home. They've been poor at home.
Yeah.
I mean, they lost to Man United, which is a difficult match. They lost at home to Southampton. Before that, they lost at home to Cardiff City. Yeah. You know, I think in the League Cup,
Newport in the FA Cup was a terrible thing to play a B team on your Leicester City. That was just a terrible decision.
So, you know, I'm sure Leicester fans who don't like him will be shouting at the radio saying, "Well, hang on a minute, guys. You know, they haven't been good at home." Yeah. And that's really important. We both know.
Correct.
We've been there for a lot of years, and we know how important it is for you to play well in front of your home fans. We know what it feels like when the results are bad. It's not great, and I get that's been happening. But surely the away performances have been, the results have been much better. There has to be a kind of appreciation that this isn't going to change overnight, and it is different, and the players are young. But isn't it kind of nice and a little bit exciting that some of these young players are starting to thrive and they're starting to do well? They're starting to create chances, not score them, of course, which they have to learn to do. But there's enough signs for me, and we've seen plenty of Leicester, to think, you know what, I know there's been some bad times at home, but this is all right. This is all right. Don't jump on this guy to fire him. But we'll see. You know, we'll see the pressure and what's going on behind the scenes, the dressing room. If they're not behind him, then it becomes difficult. But listen, I just think they deserve a mention. They deserve credit today, because it's not easy at this level against that team with young players
have
a spell of playing some really nice football and creating a lot of chances.
Just before we move on, mate, I want to get your take on the Vardy thing, because in the studio we were debating it a little bit, and obviously I think it's the first time I've ever seen done in the Premier since we've had the rights.
Yeah.
So Jamie Vardy's warming up as a sub. They win the penalty kick to Madison, goes down under Vertonghen's challenge. Referee points to the spot.
Yeah.
Claude Puel sends on Jamie Vardy. Apparently sort of said if Vardy felt he was happy to take it, he's happy. Madison looked like he was very prepared to give the ball to Vardy. Vardy takes the kick, and it's a decent save by Hugo Lloris. Not the best penalty he's ever taken, the goalkeeper comes up with a good save. Mm. Now, Beck said to me, "Oh, is that a bad decision?" And I said, "Well, it's a bad decision because he missed, and it's a good decision as he scores." And I said, from my point of view, if I've got a guy who's the club's leading scorer, who takes penalties and he scored his last six penalties in the Premier League, and he's coming on, then I'm okay with him coming on and taking the penalty.
Yeah, I wasn't okay with it. I'm not okay with it.
What are you not okay about?
Because he's been sat on his backside. He's had a warm-up. He's not in any way used to anything about that, being out there, getting his legs stretched, getting his legs warm, getting a feel of the football, getting a feel of everything. Just getting his mind up to what's going on, to be ready, to be his heart, to be pumping it at the right. I mean, he's just not in the best position to succeed right there. You know, the ball's popped there. It's the first time he's kicked the ball. And he's been sat on the sideline a long time. And for to ask him to come up and to take that penalty, I just thought it was a mistake, Rob. And
did
I get
you?
His record. I get his personality, his experience. I just think it's difficult. Like, the first kick of the ball in that environment, your mentality's not up to speed.
Those guys generally, like those good penalty takers, just do it with their eyes shut. It's part of the rhythm. They run up, they know where to go, and they hit the ball. We were trying to align it to an NFL kicker, really. I mean, he's not in the game running up and down. He comes on, he's got to whack it ball down.
Yeah, but he's
the
on the sideline kicking a ball into a net for like 20 minutes before he... I mean, he's constantly warming up his leg. He's kicking a ball, he's rehearsing that moment. Jamie Vardy's not kicking anything on the sideline. He's just warming up, doing a few stretches. He's like, okay, I'm coming onto the field of play. His body temperature's not to what he wants to be. He's not got familiar with the football.
Listen, I hear you, and I get these two sides of the argument, and I'm not going against yours. I think if you're a Claude Puel kind of supporter, you say, well, he's a goal scorer, he's a man that regularly take it, and I did it. I think if you're not, you say, well, what if Madison had taken it and missed? Do you know what people would have said? Yeah, oh, you should have let Vardy do it. He's your man. He scores. So you can't win unless Jamie Vardy puts the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, but he didn't.
No, so that's absolutely.
You know, and it wasn't a great. If it was smashing into a top corner and the keeper makes a brilliant save, then you know what? There's not much else he can do about it. Mm. But it was kind of it was nowhere near the corner, and it's a good height for him.
And then Jamie Vardy being Jamie Vardy nicks a goal anyway. It's like
he did.
Listen, not a great result for Leicester, but I thought it was a decent day at Wembley. And like you said, it was good to give a bit of love to a team not in the top six. Yeah. And hopefully Clubwell gets time to see this thing out and manage this football club to some success. Yep. Let's talk about a club that's having plenty of success at the moment. Win after win after win for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Mm-hmm. Paul Pogba continues to come good. Things going swimmingly well against a Fulham team that I'm afraid individual areas, defensive mistakes, looks like it's going to send them back to the Championship. More of the same for Ole. Did we learn anything more from the 3-0 away win?
Yeah, I learned a couple of things, Rob. The midfield of Matic, Herrera and Pogba is really good. Is really well balanced. It's, you know, Herrera can do a little bit of everything. Yeah. Matic, we know what he does in linking the stuff together and sniffing out danger and being physical. Pogba, of course, now with the attacking mindset of the team, he's where he was for his goal, he's almost playing as a striker. Yeah. So there's license there to do stuff. The goals came from United thinking forward, positioning themselves forward and playing the ball forward. The Pogba finish is ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, the goalkeeper, you've got to look at the goalkeeper, but just the swing of that left foot and the accuracy and the power is pretty special. Mm. Martial going through, again, quality finishes, great move, great balance, you know, determination to stay on his feet and to manoeuvre that ball into the corner. So I think that in terms of the positive side of things, you know, made a few changes with games coming up and still, it still made me write down, Rob, that the focus was excellent. The attitude and the quality was excellent given Champions League football on Tuesday. Yeah. You know, and that's what's impressive about this is there was no drop off. The last game or so, you know, maybe we weren't quite as good. But back to very good. Now on the negative side of things, Rob, I'll tell you where we're going to go. We're going to go to the same place for me the last few weeks. Romelu Lukaku.
Big Rom.
And just state, you know. so let me say this as a statement.
Wow, I can feel something coming here. You need a drum roll.
Yeah. So given the change and the level and the speed of the attacking football of Man United, Romelu Lukaku now looks out of his depth. As if the level of football is too high for him in that spot, being offside, giving the ball away, you know, not looking like he's excited to be in part of the fast-flowing football. I mean, that's just how I see it. Yeah. And that might seem really, really harsh. I'm just saying it as honest as I can be. When I look at the game, he looks out of his depth like this isn't for him anymore.
Well, I said to you last week, Rob, this is going to be Romelu Lukaku is going to be a problem to Solskjaer, whoever is at the football club.
Yeah, but what do you think? Do you think
Romelu Lukaku
is too harsh?
The overriding, when I looked at not the team as a whole, but certainly the part of the team was part Manchester United B team. And Romelu Lukaku is the main striker in Manchester United's B team. Manchester United's A team has Romelu Lukaku on the bench. Now, when you've been bought for the amount of money he's been bought, when you've been the main goal scorer in the football club you've been at, when you're at his age and standing in international and world football, you're not happy with a young kid, as good he is, as nice a kid as he is, in front of you, scoring goals, looking the part, and looking better with him than with you. And so, come the summer, it's going to be a problem for somebody.
Romelu Lukaku played the whole game, couldn't score against this Fulham back line. And I would say this, Robbie Earl, if somebody came to watch that game and they were asked to look at strikers, they're not seeing much different between Alexander Mitrovic and Romelu Lukaku. That's what I'm saying. Lukaku puts himself around like Lukaku does. Mitrovic, you know, will be a goal threat, like Lukaku sometimes looks like he is when he bundles his way through. Now, again, it might be too harsh, but I'm telling you right now from that game, Mitrovic and Lukaku, I didn't see a great deal of difference in terms of what they bring to their team and the qualities that they offer.
No, unfortunately, Rob, I can't give you an argument on that. And what I would say is Mitrovic played, I thought, reasonably well for Fulham, and Romelu Lukaku didn't play anywhere near his capacity. So that's the difference.
Yeah, but, I mean, his confidence looks down, and he's a confidence
player. Yeah. And when his confidence is low, the goals ain't coming. His movement looks low. He gets laboured. I sometimes think he switches off a bit. His brain, like you say, the offside. I see him kind of watching the game rather than being involved in it. And what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has bought, this freedom and this fluidity and the way of playing, it's almost like you don't need the fixed point of that big centre forward. You know, you've got the Martials,
you
and Rashford.
You need something different
running,
from him, Rob.
Yeah,
something
running
different.
Behind and whatever. And he isn't doing that well enough. He's not on top of his game enough to be doing that for the football club. So, listen, this is a challenge for Solskjaer. You know, so many things have gone well. He's now got to get Lukaku, because he's also got to be careful. If Rashford picks up an injury or Martial picks up one injury, he might need him. So he doesn't really want this situation where his form goes and he can't rely on him, because big games are coming for Manchester United with the fourth spot and the Champions League, which is going to be crucial.
Yeah, I just think when he was good for Everton, he was good because Everton, you know, played on the counter-attack a fair bit, and he's good with balls in behind. On the counter-attack, he was really good going through and finishing. And, of course, what he's really good at is attacking crosses. Yeah. And if you watch him for United now, as they build up the play, he's not really wanting to get involved in the intricate technical stuff. He pulls away from the ball, if it's in a wide position, ready for a cross. And he's really good at that. And under Mourinho, at times, that's where he scored a lot of his goals. When Ashley Young would check in and swing balls in, he headed, and it was great. But now it's different, and you want something different from your striker, not some guy that's going to kind of, as you say, watch the game a little bit and find his way to the back post ready for a cross, because there's not that many crosses coming in, because there's technicalities and combinations, et cetera, to find a way through, with Pogba driving through and everything else. So, listen, again, it may be harsh. His confidence is low a little bit. I just thought from this game, and you asked me what I'd learned from the game, blimey. You know, it looks a little bit awkward with him playing up front. Just on Fulham, real quick. I mean, this is the obvious. This is stating the obvious. The defensive frailties, ineptitude, is actually pretty stunning when you watch it. Yeah. And that's not to take anything away from United's football with some brilliant goals, but blimmin' heck, the mistakes and the gaps and stuff. This is all with an Italian manager that will
try. You're supposed to be working on it, Rob.
I know, but you haven't got the right individuals. Le Marchand was shocking as a centre back. So it's difficult to see a way out. When you look at Babel, Babel wasn't great, but Schürrle and Mitrovic and Vieto, and there's some good attackers there. We said this a million times before, but my goodness. If they can't defend like basic stuff, then they're not going to stay up.
58 goals conceded already. 58. Yep. I mean, it's just ridiculous for a team that wants to give themselves a chance. And at the other end of the pitch, bad, by the way, can cause the teams a few problems, but he's going to have to sort things out. It'll be Championship football next for Fulham. Just before we move on, Rob, a big game for Man United Champions League, PSG. I've heard that actually Cavani might be struggling. There's no Neymar. Things against him to fall for Solskjaer. They say, what is it? The harder you work, the luckier you get. Mm. Big game this one for Solskjaer. If he can find his way past PSG in two games, doesn't start to strengthen his case. That, you know, people said, they've only league games, they're only this, they're only that. All of a sudden, I think that takes him to another level in the race for the Manchester United job.
Totally agree. I mean, I had no chance of getting past PSG, as it was before in the Mourinho and the way that PSG were kind of looking and the new manager. Now you're like, wow, they got a real chance. I think there's a couple of other injuries as well that PSG might have, Rob, that might stop them a little bit in terms of what they're trying to do. But Cavani is a big deal. He limped off the last game, I think, didn't he? And he's got a real problem now. Verratti is and may be an injury doubt as well. So United, with the way that they are playing, the confidence in this competition, I mean, who knows? Who knows? You know, at Old Trafford on Tuesday, brilliant game, brilliant atmosphere, confidence is sky high. Some of the players for United, the key ones, were rested in that game against Fulham. So it's going to be marvellous. And from tipping, when we got the knockout stages, you know, I had United going out at this stage. Now, I don't know. I mean, much closer.
That attacking threat they've got with Pogba driving from midfield, as you say, the balance with Herrera now and Matic. Lindelof and Bailly, all of a sudden the players that we were going like, are they going to be good enough? All of a sudden looked like players that we're saying, you know what, they can give PSG trouble over the two games.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it's a great competition, and we'll see. But they absolutely have got a much better chance now. I still, you know what, I still probably would just edge PSG, but with no great confidence, given the way that United are playing and the confidence that they've got, and poor Pogba that looks
bang on at the moment, doesn't
pretty bang on at the moment in all regards. I mean, what a player, what a specimen, what feet, what craft, what creativity, what vision and scoring, and wow, I mean, it's just quite remarkable, not just him but the whole team, and we are saying it every single week, but wow, they look good. And it's full marks to the manager right now.
Absolutely in charge. Ole keeps on getting the wins. Manchester United, big game against PSG. Old Trafford will be jumping on Tuesday night as they host the Parisians in a huge game in Champions League. Just finally, Robert, let's talk just a little bit about Arsenal. Went away from home and managed to get a victory. Didn't keep a clean sheet, which bizarrely I read somewhere that they're the only Premier League team that haven't kept an away clean sheet all season, which is all a bit weird. Mm. But they got the goals. Iwobi, slightly deflection, and Lacazette led the line and got his goal and was enough in the end. An own goal by Kolasinac wasn't enough for Huddersfield. I mean, Huddersfield look a bit dead and buried, I'm afraid. Ziva, I think, is already planning for life in the Championship. From Arsenal's point of view, a regular 2 points, just the thing you've got to do. No Aubameyang for illness. No Mesut Ozil for illness. He's ill a lot, Mesut, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, who knows? This saga continues, you know, and we've said it before, this is a difficult job. It really is. But you do get the sense around the club, Rob, that the fans know this is difficult. They know it's a difficult period of time now. But Mesut Ozil with you know, we don't know what's wrong with him, but he's got to be involved. He's got to be playing because it's going to be difficult to move him on. And this is a good result, but this has been typical of Arsenal. To be fair, they've had some big matches against some of the bigger boys in different competitions, and they haven't done particularly well. But this is a big picture one for me, Rob. I think Arsenal to the end of the season now, and we're going to keep talking about them, and we're going to watch the games, of course, and we're going to break them down when we can. It's just so obvious to me that this is about the summer, and this is about the ownership. It's about Stan Kroenke and what he's prepared to do to make this club win. And, you know, I speak to Arsenal fans all the time around where I live and stuff like that. And that is it. And that's what people are worried about, is what is he going to put into it? What money is he going to give them? They're worried because of the January window with no permanent signings. And that's it. And that really is it. We've seen what Fenway Sports Group have done at Liverpool. Determination to increase the revenues, to increase the ground capacity, to bring in players, to sack directors of football, to hire different managers, to get to win. And they're on the brink of winning. Are Arsenal going to do the same thing? Stan Kroenke has a history. He's got all these franchises in sports, and they do okay. And not really many champions, not many trophies. Mm. And that will be the concern, that he is the owner and he's kind of happy. It's very much like a business. Champions League football, of course, is what he needs. So, they've got to do something about that to get back in there. But that is the issue and the something that we all got to watch for. We can talk about structure, Rob. We can talk about owner Emery. We can talk about Mesut Ozil, doctors of football and everything else and how they structure it. It means nothing if the owner doesn't want to win badly. Because if he doesn't want to win badly, he won't be putting a lot of money in. He won't be, driving the staff, the coaching staff, to win. That's the issue, and that is what I worry about for Arsenal. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Unai Emery is going to get some money. Maybe they'll find a way to get rid of Ozil off the wage bill, because it's obvious that the manager doesn't fancy him, want him, need him. I don't know. So there's lots of questions that will get answered in the summer.
Yeah, for sure. It's a big summer for Arsenal. I think Arsenal fans used to feel it was Arsene Wenger that was holding this team back. It seems like the ownership. Stan Kroenke's got to decide which way he wants to go. Does he want to challenge for silverware and put the finances in place? Or is he happy just scraping around a fourth spot? If he is, Arsenal fans have to understand that and decide whether that's what they want from their football club. A couple of other results, Rob, just from this weekend. Watford 1, Everton 0. Marco Silva going back to Vicarage Road. Richarlison returning, but Andre Gray's goal enough to give all 3 points for Watford. And a little bit of pressure just starting to build on Marco Silva again. Kurt Zouma got sent off bizarrely after the game.
Yeah, well, it continues, doesn't it? It just continues, you know, and different stories around this Premier League. Marco Silva is just very interesting, because a guy that's been sought after, certainly Everton, for a long period of time. They've got him now, and yet the results continue to be very inconsistent and not what you'd expect given the resource, given the club and the money and the ownership and some of the players they've got there over the last few years. They've lost three on a spin now. You know, they're in ninth spot, kind of drifting downwards. So another one of those clubs where, like, they won't be happy. And I know in this 20-team Premier League, there aren't many that are happy, you know. But Everton right now is one of those that really are disappointed with what's going on. I still think that the striker situation is the main problem. There's some good players there. But if you haven't got a really talented striker in your team, and there's a bit of inconsistency.
Tosin, didn't he,
you have Jim Tosin, you've got Calvert-Lewin. You know, Theo Walcott. Charlie can do it, but I think he's better from the left. So that continues to be an issue. Everton is a tough kind of watch at the moment, given that stadium and the pressure that can put on the team.
Given that he left Watford to join Everton, and Watford now 4 points, I think, ahead of Everton in the league and all that. And would there be an argument for Marco Silva to actually stay at Watford? Enhanced his reputation, where the expectancy might not have been quite so high, and he'd have been better off.
Well, so it's okay to say that now.
Yeah, because Everton's a big club.
Everton's a big club. It's just one of those clubs where I think if you're a manager and you've got a really positive sniff to go there, I think you'd want to do it. You'd want to do it. It's a great club, Everton. I think we both love playing there. It's just one of those old grounds.
Love to
real
see them
close.
Back up there and challenging the top six.
Yeah, I want to see a good Everton.
Yeah.
And the owner is ready. I mean, to ownership again. He does want to win.
Yeah.
And he is
putting his money in and a new stadium and lots to look forward to. But football's got to come on the pitch.
It doesn't happen automatically, does it? You
know? No. Big game down at the bottom as well. Southampton 1, Cardiff 2. We've got to give a little bit of love to Neil Warnock in Cardiff. Salt Bamboo, who's my new BFF. I just love everything about Big Soul. Ken Zahor got a goal. And what was an emotional week for the football club. Neil Warnock's done a brilliant job and giving themselves a chance, Rob.
They really have. What a game this was. What a game it was. I mean, of the weekend, Rob, in terms of pressure situations, big games and meaningful games, I thought this is right up there. I mean, you know, really, really important match. In Southampton, we know they've trimmed the squad a little bit. You know, Hasenhüttl is confident that what he's got and some of the younger ones, that they can do well enough. But they're in trouble. This is an awful result to come back, to get 1-1 and really late in the game, and then to still lose it with that Zahor goal in the 93rd minute or whatever. I mean, that's tough to take. And they're sat in the bottom three. I mean, a lot of people thought the Cardiff were going to go down. I mean, of course, the tragedy that happened to this Emiliano Sala, this player, and the emotional strain and stress is put on a football club that have come together in this situation so well, I guess. And I just wonder, Rob, if it can galvanise the club and the team, the manager emotionally, to pull this team away from the relegation zone. It is going to be fascinating to see. It really is, because they do lack the quality of a lot of other teams in this league. But with a together club and a manager that wears his heart on his sleeve, and my goodness, he's been strong these last couple of weeks, they might just do it. They're sat in a spot, rather than 16th spot right now, and a strong record at home. This away victory is going to be marvellous for them. It was a special result. And Southampton, you know, I changed. I had Southampton getting relegated at the start of the season. I liked the new manager. Yeah. I liked some of the performances early on. Good reputation in Germany. I thought it was going to be okay. Maybe I was wrong to doubt my initial shout. What do you think, Rob? We keep talking about the squad of players and stuff.
Their squad isn't that good. They got back in the game at 1-1 in 91 minutes and then let up a goal. And again, and let's just remember what we said on the transfer deadline. And I think we both had a similar thought. Love Hasenhüttl, loves what he's brought the energy. But he made a big call in going lean with his squad, and we both said, that's a gamble. He's brave, and you know, he seems to know what he's doing, but it's a bit of a gamble. And you know, with games to come, they hope he keeps his confidence and his belief that Southampton can get out, because he has turned things around, and players do look better under him. But this league is unrelenting, and if you're not fully at it, as Corey showed yesterday, you'll lose games. And just finally, a little bit of love for the Ginger Mourinho, because he's turning things around at Burnley. Sean Dyche, 3-1 winners against Brighton. Chris Wood with a couple of goals, and Ashley Barnes. Again, it was a bit like Brighton of Burnley of last season, to be honest, Rob. Not all the possession, well set up, disciplined, 4-4-2, hit people on the counter-attack, got a couple of goals through the strikers, and you just get the sense now on 27 points, same points now as Brighton, funnily enough, that Burnley are going in one direction, and a slight little worry for Brighton. I think that's only one win in the last 11 Premier League games now.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's work. I mean, to be fair, Rob, both teams have got work to do.
Yeah.
27 points from 26. You're averaging just over one, you know, a point a game, and you know you want to get into 40 points. Yeah. So, the bottom of the table, we've got 11 points at Huddersfield, 17 on with Fulham, and then the next 24, 24, 25, 27, 27. I mean, that's tight within 3 points.
From Palace down, are in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Palace, Brighton, Burnley, Cardiff, Newcastle, Southampton are fighting for that one spot. Mm.
They are, and it's going to be fascinating. And we always love it every single year. Yeah. I mean, the. Yeah. That threat or that danger of being relegated from this league is so strong for clubs and for players and for everybody concerned with the football club. It's going to be brilliant. We got races at all points, Rob, and that's what's great about it. As the champions, we've got a race for the top four. We've got a race for the best of the rest. The seventh spot thing, which I think is kind of interesting, of out of that six, who can be the best of the other teams. And we're going to have a relegation race as well. And this is what we want. What we've got, 12 games or so to go. Mm. It should be a fantastic finish to the Premier League.
And that, Robbie Musto, is why it's the best league in the world. So that's it from us. But as ever, we want to hear from you, our listeners. So download the Two Robbies Show on Apple Podcast and please let us know what you think. And this week, we're keen to hear from you, our listeners, whether you're a Chelsea fan or not. Should it be back sorry or sack sorry? Let us know what you think and we'll read out the best responses on our next podcast. So Manchester City stick 6 past Chelsea, Liverpool score 3 at Anfield, and Spurs stick in the race with a good win against Leicester. And don't forget our midweek Euro podcast when Manchester United face PSG on Tuesday. On Wednesday, Spurs face Dortmund. And on Thursday, Chelsea away at Malmo in the Europa League. What Chelsea will turn up then? I'm Earl, he's Musto, together with the Two Robbies. Thanks for listening. And it's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him.
Good night.
Good night.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.